Hey everybody, Shane here with the Rock Paper Podcast. This week's episode is sponsored by Allison Barth Agency with Farmers Insurance. She works with all lines of insurance, whether it's home, auto, life, or business. Give her a call at 636-288-4672. She'll get you a quote. It's fast, easy, and painless. See what she can save you some money and make sure you're properly insured. Again, it's 288-4672. Allison Barth Agency with Farmers Insurance.
Hey, this is Jimmy Griffin from El Monstero on Celebration Day, and you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast on whatever you're listening on.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Welcome to Rock Paper Podcast, episode 18. My name is Chris Bemeter.
I'm Shane Presley.
You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Stitcher, iTunes, all those good things. By now, you are well aware. You can find us on rockpaperpodcast.com. Our guest this week is, I would say, almost like a local staple in St. Louis. He is in at least 50,000 bands, I think. You can catch him on September 27th at the Chesterfield Amphitheater with Celebration Day. Our guest, Jimmy Griffin. Jimmy, thanks for coming. Hanging out.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And your first podcast, so I mean,
yeah, this is
legally binding. You can't be on any other podcast after this. So just the rules.
I've been doing this since I was 17 years old, and I've never been on a podcast. So.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a new technology. It's kind of taken off, I guess you could say. Recording in a killer vintage guitar store here. We were just kind of talking before we started recording, and like, I just love all the guitars in here. Like, I'm not a great guitar player or anything, but I do appreciate just. Guitars.
Yeah, this is a great place to appreciate guitars.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
We have, like, there's so few of these left in America that are just like a, I don't want to say a man's guitar store, but it's a man's. You know, it's one of the last of the single proprietor rock and roll guitar stores.
Well, it's kind of nice that you probably come in here and it's not a Guitar Center where like every single person's playing like the Metallica riff or something. There's like 18 different guitars going in the background. You're like,
we occasionally have the Metallica, you know, thing happening here, but it's a bit more rare than you, you know.
Yeah. Stairway denied.
Yeah. No stairway to heaven.
Right.
So you're in just a bunch of different kind of local bands. You're in El Monstero, which is the Pink Floyd cover band. You guys just played a show not too long ago, which I hear is pretty awesome. But you guys have got a nice reputation going on here. Not just the live, you know, Pink Floyd cover side, but like you guys put on an amazing show. Like from you guys spare no expense, it sounds like too.
Right.
But on top of that, you're just a musician. You love playing music, it sounds like, and just...
Yeah, man, I've been, you know, the gigs, you know, there's the Pink Floyd one, there's Celebration Day, which is the Led Zeppelin one, I do a thing called the Street Fighting Band, which is a Rolling Stones thing, so it's like all the ones when you were a kid, you get to be Jimmy Page and David Gilmour and Keith Richards, and those were three guys that you'd want to...
Yeah.
You know, be able to cop and do their stuff. It's great.
Yeah.
You know? It's not like I have to do like this week is the Partridge Family.
Right. Yeah. Well, we got the Brady Bunch next week, and that one I just can't hit those Greg Brady's. No. Do you have a preference? Not to say that one's better, but do you have a band that you kind of favor doing the covers on, or more songs that you enjoy playing?
It's different. You know, the Zeppelin one is the hardest one, just because. Mm-hmm. I've always called it, punching your way out of a bag on fire for 3 hours, you know, because you're playing stuff that they played when they were, you know, I'm 46 years old, and these guys did this stuff when they were 22 or 25 or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And you're having to do these things that are really difficult, whereas Monstero is more... You know, Cirque du Soleil, and I play a couple of songs, and I take a break for a little while, and you know, it's a little more it's slow dancing at the planetarium as opposed to, you know, the Led Zeppelin thing that's just bam,
right,
just go.
Yeah, so. You don't get up and do any of the acrobatics or anything, too.
No.
Not yet. How long have you been playing the guitar? I know it's kind of a generic, you know, but you know, when did you first start? Kind of,
I started when I was 12 years old. I had size 12 shoes, and I was about 5'8", and I couldn't play basketball anymore because I kept bouncing the ball off my foot.
Oh,
so, guitar, and I went to Catholic school, so that helped with the whole, you know, entrance into rebellion,
right,
and things like that. So.
Yeah, we mentioned El Monstero. I've been hearing of you guys for several years, but I finally got, it was last December, I went to see you guys at the pageant, and I got to see my first show, and I got right up against the fence there in the front, and I was just blown away, man. Like, it was one of the coolest shows I've ever seen, and especially at the pageant, which is one of my favorite venues in town, and but just to see, like, a, like you said, Circus du Soleil, like, it's sort of that, like, Vegas-style show right here in St. Louis, and it was very, very cool, and then, you know, the music itself, besides the show, the music itself is incredible, too.
Yeah, well, it's, Pink Floyd is kind of the, I don't want to say classical music, you know, but, you know, I think people will like this music, you know, there are kids from 13 or lower that are coming with their grandfather saw Pink Floyd, you know, that like, oh, kids, you're going to love this. And the kids have a Target Pink Floyd t-shirt on and they can have as much fun as their 63-year-old grandfather that, you know, that like saw the band. And
there's almost a bridge of generations.
Oh, you know, it's very huge, cool. Man. It's huge. And, you know, for me to get to play this stuff, and see how people react to it, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful thing, you know.
So how do you go about approaching, because I know it seems like it'd be really tough to kind of perform in a cover band of these huge bands, because people kind of have the expectation of what these bands were. So when you guys approach to maybe you know, do a project like this, do you guys try and stay as close or replicate the band as possible? Or is it saying, okay, we have these songs that the band's kind of established, and we're going to kind of put our own spin on it and kind of give it a real good show? Or is there a...
We stay pretty close just because so many people know these songs so well. Yeah. So you want to stay within a certain confine of what's going to be safe for everyone that loves these records that much. That having said that, we also... I've always said that we were the monster truck version of Pink Floyd. Like, we are, like, there's the Aussie Pink Floyd and there's Brit Pink Floyd. And some of those are probably closer to what Pink Floyd actually is, where it was kind of everybody wears black and you kind of stand back. And we're like if Pink Floyd saw some Van Halen concerts. You know, like, it's more, there's a little more crotch in it. It's a little more American. There's a little more delivery, you know, a little more Barnum and Bailey. And that's kind of what El Monstero, I think, has been really successful at, is you know, doing something that's slightly outside of where you would think it was coming from.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, I think you'd have to kind of vary a little bit because, like you said, people want to come and see these songs that they know, and if you go too far out of the box, they're going to say, this is good, but it's not what, you know, you're used to. Yeah. But so how much then goes into, like, the live show, like you said, the kind of Cirque du Soleil type thing? Do you guys kind of have a hand in how you guys want to bring different things into that, or is it a...
There are big ideas that we have, like, hey, what if we set a guy on fire or whatever, you know, like, what happens if we do this? And there are insurance things that we have to do. Oh, dude, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
You die when you, like, the first year we had an aerialist, and, like, last year we had several aerialists. Right. But the first year we had one was a girl named Tori who went on to go to Cirque du Soleil, and she was on in Vegas, and she's done a bunch of shows in that. I was like, man, you know what would be really awesome is if she got to the end of her thing, and, like, you can climb up into the rafters at the pageant. There are rafters up there where guys hang, you know, rigging and things like that from. Mm-hmm. I was like, it'd be really great if she climbed up there and, like, we start the next song and then we drop a dummy from all the way up there, and it just, like, hits the thing in the middle of this thing that we're doing, and we just keep going, and everybody loses, and we're like, we cannot do that, you know. So there's, like, ideas like that that don't necessarily make it to fruition,
right?
And then there's ideas like, well, what if we put, you know, so and so in a straitjacket, and this happens, and you know, so that we kind of sit around and spitball a lot of different scenarios, and some things work and some things don't.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of like the sky's the limit, and then you got to have to kind of, once you hit there, you say, okay, well, how can we realistically do this without, you know, actually killing somebody or giving the crowd a heart attack. So right. It's also right.
Which I thought would be great. You know?
Well, you think essentially like, part of the show, they're like, and then they find out, like, oh, that was awesome. You know, right. They'd be like, I mean, if you really drop somebody, I'm sure that'd be a bummer for the.
Oh, that would be very bad. But, insurance will not cover dropping yeah. someone.
They are a little hesitant on the bodily injury yes. of people.
Yes, indeed. Jeez.
So yeah. you guys, what it was like, March or something, you guys went to Kansas City, right?
January, we did Kansas City and we did Springfield, Missouri, mm-hmm. which were both really successful. We've been to Kansas City. This was the second time.
Okay.
And the crowd's building there. The show in Springfield was almost sold out. Great theaters, you know, really nice people. And we're so fortunate that the people that love this band will go, like, I would say a third of the audience was people from St. Louis.
Yeah.
You know, and they trek around and they see the band, and it's great. My favorite part about Kansas City and Springfield is that the St. Louis shows, because it's been 15 years and it's kind of a staple, we have a segment of the audience that are there because it's something to do. Like, mm-hmm. oh, I've got tickets for this thing that's sold out. So yeah. let's go.
Yeah.
And people tend to yap through a lot, you know, like, well, I told Bill that I'm not going to, you know, get yeah. him a Christmas present this right. year or whatever, yeah. you know, and they're talking. And some of these songs are very dynamically mm-hmm. down, you mm-hmm. know. And the first time we played Kansas City, we would do some of these things where we're used to hearing this kind of the whole time the song is going yeah. on. And that was gone. And like to hear that, and then there were people that like, I've never seen this band. I want to see what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And when that noise floor left, I was like, oh, this is why we go to these other places.
You right. know?
And we're trying to get out a little bit more and do some more things like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were really cool.
Do you prefer, because I know you guys played amphitheaters compared, and then you play the pageant, so do you have a preference of playing indoors at a smaller venue compared to being a big, you know, amphitheater? Is there much of a difference?
They're both, the summer show and the winter show are completely different, because mm-hmm. the winter show is so much, you know, you've got 2,000 people in a room, and the farthest person away from you is maybe 200 or 300 feet.
Right.
Whereas, you know, on the summer shows, there's people...
The lawn
300 out. Yards, yeah. you know, 500, 600 yards away from you.
Yeah.
Because I just realized that 200 feet was 200 yards. yeah, yeah. I don't know metrics. But yeah, we're able to do more theatrical things in the smaller show just because everyone can see exactly what's going on. Whereas Art Hill this year, mm-hmm. you know, if you're, you know, 2 football fields away from what's happening on the stage, you can't yeah. necessarily, like, is that a guy in a
right
is that a guy in a bike, or is it, you know, is yeah. a dude on stilts? Oh, it's a guy in stilts. Yeah. You know, unless you got binoculars, it's a little. But at the outdoor stuff, we can blow up more things and
right.
and shoot fire in the air and, you know, do the stuff that we can't necessarily do inside. Yeah. So
it's kind of got their benefits for ease. But yeah. we've talked about this, too. Like, it seems like indoor shows or even stuff like the pageant, there's a lot more, you know, that intimate feel. And you get a lot more, I think, reaction from the fans. And,
right.
You know, and it's just a more enjoyable, solid experience, I think, compared to being outdoor. And like you said, there's people maybe watching most of the show on, like, I don't like Riverport. They have the screens, and you're just kind of watching that. It's like, oh, you could have just watched that on TV, you know, right. compared to being... right in front of them, you know,
right.
regardless if you have the worst seats in the house, you're still
well,
pretty
the
awesome,
thing
you know?
That we've done at Riverport that I've always loved is, like, we're the only band in the history of that place that's ever set off pyro on top of the show.
Oh.
So if you're sitting out in the weeds and we're blowing 50-foot flames off the top of the thing, like, hey, you know, what? Like, when Kiss blows up stuff, it's underneath the shed. And you're like,
yeah.
oh, hey, they just blew off the fire. When we right. blow off fire off top of that shed, they're like, hey, or flying a helicopter or things
right.
like that that are, yeah. you know, they're like, hey, these guys, you know, these guys care.
They can handle it. Right, yeah, right. Well, it's always, like, been, whenever I've seen... there are certain shows that I've seen where the bands are just there and they're just playing through the repetition. And
right.
I almost think half of the part of playing a show outside of the music side of it is putting on a good show and showing, like, you know,
yeah.
that kind of entertainment side of things. And if you're there just to kind of say, oh, okay, I'm just playing this song, it's kind of, I think you're kind of cutting the audience short on what, you know, you should be entertaining them. And some people are cool with just hearing the songs, but
right.
I think I give a lot more credit to bands that go out and actually try and put on a little above and beyond for the fans to entertain them. And
we are nothing if we are not above and beyond.
Right. You won't see a guy just stand there and just playing.
Right. No, no. Yeah. That's I think a staple of that gig is that it's like, okay, how do we go past this thing that you've already hit, you know, and that's why the shows continue to, you know, my first year was, I think, the ninth year of the gig. I mean, I'm the new guy and I've been in it for 8 years.
Yeah.
And the first year I was in, it was the first year we went to 4 nights and now it's up to 7 and this year will probably be 8 or whatever, you know, it keeps continuing to expand. But it's always that, like, what can we, and I think a lot of people see the gig and think these guys are making a ton of money. And granted, it's a decent payday for a musician. You know, if you're like used to playing for $50 and you get to do this gig, it's more money than those gigs. But at the same time, so much money goes into the production of it
to
keep the people coming. You know, to be like, man, what are they going to do this time? You know, 2010 we did the kind of in the round thing where we had the stage was in the middle of the pageant's dance floor and we had people seated on the stage. If you want to see some crazy shit, go to the can I see shit? But go to 2010 El Monstero and the stage is only the back section of where we are. The rest of the band is in the middle of the dance floor, and we sold seats on the stage. So there were people 5 or 6 feet away from us while we were doing the gig.
Nice.
You know, so it's things like that where we always try to throw something in to keep it, you know.
Yeah, well, like, it's kind of funny because you think, you know, on paper maybe you just think, okay, well, they're playing in the middle. But when you actually see it and you're there, it adds a whole new dynamic that you wouldn't think would make that big of a difference.
I mean, how many shows have you seen at the pageant? You've never seen that.
Right.
You've never seen... I mean, we brought in Clancy staging, and it was, I mean, the where the lip of the stage is, where a band would normally be, was the drum riser.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of the band is out in the middle of the floor. So it was kind of a, and we had PA all the way around the stage for the people that were seated on the stage. So they could hear the mix that the out front people would be hearing. It was, you know, it was insane. You know? And it's those kind of things that we try to do to keep it cool and to keep people coming back. You know?
Yeah, the only show I've ever seen like that, like in the round, was like, well, I guess two, but they were comedy, which works because it's a one microphone pretty much instead of a full band.
Right.
But yeah, like I've seen like Dane Cook and then I saw the blue collar comedy guys at the Scotch Raid or whatever and doing an in the round like that.
Imagine 75 microphones.
Right. Yeah. That's wild, man.
Yeah.
So you guys, what do you guys are doing a documentary too or something, right?
They started shooting that. I don't know when it's ever going to be done.
Yeah.
They started shooting that last fall. So, we did they shot the Zeppelin show last August. And then they started filming rehearsals in November and December, shot all the December shows, and they shot the summer show. I think they're wrapping now, and hopefully it'll be... They wanted to get it in South by Southwest Film Festival, which would be March. So I don't know if that's still the plan, but...
That'd be fun.
I just did my interview for it a couple weeks, about a month ago. They've interviewed everybody in the band. They've shot all these shows. We have all these great... I mean, there's so many... Just the connection to the music, the band, the city.
Yeah.
I think we're all the things they kind of wanted to get across. And we had a woman... this was a year and a half ago. Last year when we played Verizon, when we played Wish You Were Here, we did kind of a montage of photos because we had some friends that had passed and we wanted to, you know, we got this, it all started with this woman that had sent us a letter, and she and her husband had seen us at Verizon in, I guess, 2011. And that was the last show they saw together. A month after the show, they were riding their motorcycle, wrecked. He died. Hmm. She lived, and, you know, that was the last concert they ever saw together. Mm-hmm. And she sent us this email through the Facebook of the band. You know, can you put up his picture when you guys do the song? We're like, yeah, all right, I can do that. Yeah, we can do that, totally. So we put it out to the fans of like, hey, if you're missing somebody or somebody that has passed this year, please send it. We got this deluge of, you know, of stories of people, of, you know, of lives, of human beings, of, you know. Mm-hmm. And we did this thing, you know, the first year of Verizon, or last year of Verizon, we ran this whole montage of all these people, and it was just this huge, like, emotional thing that, you know, it connects us to the songs, to the people that come to see us play. And it was huge, you know. I had one last year, woman, the documentary crew was filming me going down the line, like meeting people that were waiting in line to go to the show. Mm-hmm. And she has this t-shirt. She's like, I want you to have this t-shirt. This is my friend Hans. I was like, okay. And she goes, we used to come see the show every year. And I'd remember them from being, you know, they would come up front and I'd seen these people. Mm-hmm. And she said he was dying, and he'd passed a couple of months ago. And when he was dying, and he knew he was dying, we all went to his house. And all he wanted to do was listen to Pink Floyd. So we just played Pink Floyd all day while we were waiting for him to basically die.
Yeah.
And he passed away during Goodbye Blue Sky. And so this Christmas, they're all at the show, and we start playing Goodbye Blue Sky. And I can just see, like, and I can't even look at her, but I can see her at the soundboard right over here out of my field of vision. She's just totally having a moment. And this happens a lot at those gigs. And, you know, and I, like, tried to not visualize it. And then by the end of the night, we got to Wish You Were Here, and I had dedicated the song to him. And all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I see this woman. And you know how packed those shows are. I mean, it's intensely packed.
Yeah.
And I just see her start to kind of drift through. And people are getting out of her way. They're like, you know, letting her move throughout this mass of humanity. And she gets to right in front of the barricade. And she's just tears. And she's got both of her hands up. And she's crying and having this, like, awesome, great, sad thing is happening, you know, and we're like right in the middle of it, and just trying not to, you know, there's all these things. That's what the documentary is all about. It's all these people and all this music and all the things that connect all these things. So I know I got off on a rant.
I think, like, sometimes it's really interesting how you know, people have a connection with a certain thing, whether it's a show or a movie or whatever, and to have that, like, you guys do that for them is probably just an incredible, like, like I said, connection that they just appreciate it so much that as much as it has, you know, an effect on you, it has probably tenfold on them, and they just appreciate it so much. And something that maybe people think, oh, well, they put a picture up. Those people that it's affecting really appreciate that. Wow. And I think that's amazing that, you know.
Well, there's that, you know, people like, it's a tribute band, you know, and it's like, yeah, we play music that we didn't write, but it's, I think, the depth of what we're able to accomplish through the music that we didn't write, is what makes it, you know, you can go see a tribute band anywhere, you know, like a tribute to Hall & Oates or whatever, you know, but like this is, I think this kind of goes beyond, you know, what you think you're going to see.
Yeah.
And that's what I think. The documentary is filmed by a guy named Mark Halsky, who had never seen the band before, I think it was 2012. Mm-hmm. And I always heard about it, like, whatever, you know, Pink Floyd band. And came and saw a show, flipped out, was like, I can't believe that. And it was six nights in 2012, and can't believe this happens, and then contacted us and was like, I want to shoot a documentary about this thing. And like I said, it's the radio station, it's Keishi, it's the city, it's the band, mm-hmm. it's the music, it's all this stuff. It's really neat.
You said it earlier. I had the same conversation with Chris on the way down, where, you guys are a tribute band, but I've seen a lot of these terrible tribute bands, right. And it's like, I mean, it's these guys that are trying to be, like I said, Hall & Oates or whatever. They got the wigs or whatever, and it's like, but you guys aren't trying to be Pink Floyd. You're trying to just play these songs the best you can and create this show. And but yeah, like it's like I had the same reaction. Like the documentary guy, like, you know, it blew my mind seeing you guys recreate this all on stage. And like you said, you close your eyes and the music alone, and how, you know, you guys pick up on all the little pieces of the music on the record, you know, and you recreate it live, which is difficult sometimes that they did in a studio, and you guys are doing it live. And
well, and it gives people too the opportunity that wouldn't probably normally be able to get that type of, you know, performance or whatever, especially if they're a huge Pink Floyd fan, you know, to go and get as close as they can to hear just something that's almost spot on, but also get that enjoyment factor. And I think that's probably why people connect to it so much too. It's just that I mean, music's a a crazy thing, and people that more so than anything can connect to it, you know, and it's incredible.
Yeah.
Is the Led Zeppelin, I haven't been to the celebration day, but is that a pretty similar experience?
It's not as Barnum and Bailey because they never did it.
Yeah, they
so it wouldn't be as, you know, those guys threw up a bunch of Marshalls, played really loud and had some lights. Yeah. And that was the power of that band, was the physical, you know, that band is all crotch.
Yeah.
And it's all, you know, it's like, hey man, here we are. Suck it, and that you just go out there and like punch for like 3 hours. It's like boxing, and that band is different because there's the physicality of it and the just getting out there and, you know, letting it fly. And you can see with, you know, where a band like Pink Floyd, it's all very like it's. All the tempos are right around here, and it's, you know, it's very restrained. The Zeppelin stuff is, and you can watch that band, you can watch Led Zeppelin themselves, and you can see things where they're the most amazing thing you've ever seen, and you can watch another video where like, oh my God, these guys are terrible, you know. And within the same, you know, there's always these glimmers of like, wow, that was kind of cool, but then you're like, wow, these guys are messed up, or they're not playing so good, or whatever. And that was the genius of, I think, what they did was you were going to catch them on nights where they were the greatest band you've ever seen in your life.
Right.
And then you might catch them on another night where they were all right. Oh. You know?
I think that was kind of the Guns N' Roses thing, too. Like,
if
they showed up and they were ready to play, like, they were the hottest thing in town. But, but you know, there was nights where Axl wouldn't show up till, you know, and stuff. So it's like...
well, that, and that's what makes rock and roll.
Yeah, right. That's all rock and roll. For me, Led Zeppelin, like, I appreciate what they did. Like, obviously, but for me, like, especially as I'm getting older and I go back and I learn more of the blues that influence these guys, and you realize how much, especially like Led Zeppelin 1, how much of, like, is all sample material as well, too. Like,
they were good borrowers.
Yeah, all right. I feel like they're... Led Zeppelin themselves are like one of the best cover bands, in a sense.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, you know, they did their own things to songs, but like a lot of those early stuff, especially like Willie Dixon songs and stuff, like these old blues songs. And I mean, they weren't the only ones. The Doors and everybody, you know, a lot of people brought these old blues songs, which where rock and roll came from, too.
Exactly. But Led Zeppelin just didn't admit it until they got sued.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And that's where I think I lost, where, you know, everything was Page and Plant. Like, it was all credited that way instead of giving credit where credit's due. And
oh man, there's some hilarious ones. Like if you go back and you like see where they stole a lot of that stuff with no regard for the fact that they had stolen it.
Yeah.
But because their approach was so different. The same way the Rolling Stones were stealing Lightning Hoppin' songs and you know, Muddy Waters songs and things like that. I mean, it was just a British spin on Black American music, you know. And they felt like they were remaking the wheel, you know, and necessarily they weren't. It was just had a little more tea on it on the back end. You know?
One of my favorite stories, there's a guy, Jake Holmes, wrote the song Dazed and Confused.
Yes, I've heard that.
Yeah, and his is like very folk kind of, like, you know, totally different one. What Led Zeppelin did to it.
Right.
But I guess the story goes that he opened for the Yardbirds or something like that, or got to perform with the Yardbirds when Page was in the Yardbirds. And then, like, I guess Pets where Page heard it, and then all of a sudden, a couple years later, it shows up on Led Zeppelin's album.
Uh-huh.
And I think he was, like, Holmes went, like, into the military or something, and so he didn't even know the song existed till like years later or something. And then it's like, I mean, and arguably Dazed and Confused is one of their biggest hits.
Right.
Yeah. And so just to think that like, that this is your song and they're selling out arenas playing it. And like, it's crazy.
And you're in the army.
Right. Yeah. Right, yeah. So I don't know if that guy ever got a cut or anything or what, but I think that's a crazy story.
I know
story.
A lot of people sued them. Yeah. I don't know how successful all those suits were. I know Willie Dixon did all right, but and some of the other guys that they, I mean, you know, those, you know, Killing Floor is, you know, it's pretty much lifted. Yeah. You know, the riff is different. The thing, I read a thing with Jimmy Page where he said, Robert was supposed to change the words, but he just never got around to it. It's like, so he kind of blames it on him. Right. Like, it's not it's not my fault. It's, Robert was supposed to change the words, and he didn't do it. You know, so it's,
But yeah, I mean, but I all that stuff, like, even going back to, like, Elvis, Hound Dog was Big Mama Thornton and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all those, like, Beach Boy songs and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you know, even before Led Zeppelin and stuff, there was all that borrowing, I guess, from Black culture and
borrowing.
Yeah, right.
I'll take this.
Is that white people stealing?
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
We didn't steal it. We borrowed it.
So white people stealing is
and
borrowing.
And made a lot of money off of it, and it's awesome now. But we just borrowed it. We'll give it back in 30 years.
Vanilla Ice.
Yeah. That's the best quote when he's people were going on about the Queen, him taking the Queen, and he's like, "No, theirs goes da na 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 na,
right.
Mine goes da na 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 na."
It's
da na 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 na.
He can genuinely look you in the face and say, "It's different. It's not the same." You're like, "You're stupid. Come on, come on, give me a break."
After we're done, I'll tell you my Vanilla Ice story.
Oh, yeah.
Was that the first cover band?
I was actually King of the Hill, my first like kind of successful band, was on SBK Records, which was Vanilla Ice's label.
Oh, yeah.
And at one point, we happened to be in the same city with Vanilla Ice, and this is the height of like when he's got the haircut and the
white
and blue jumpsuit and
Ninja Turtles too.
Yeah, and our record guy's like, "Hey, do you guys want to go see Vanilla Ice?" And it was myself and my singer. We were on this radio promotion thing. We were in Pensacola, Florida. There's nothing to do in Pensacola. I was like, "Hell yeah, we want to go see Vanilla Ice. Yeah. Let's go." So we go to this like little theater, and it's maybe, you know, 1,300 seats and stuff, packed out. And it was the loudest concert I've ever seen in my life, ever. And I've seen Deep Purple. I've seen, you know, like, I've seen Ministry on the Mind is a Terrible Thing to Taste tour. Vanilla Ice was louder than anyone I've ever seen. And the first, like, eight rows are all little kids who, like, love Vanilla Ice.
Yeah.
And they're just have their hands on their heads, and they're crying. And they're just looking at it like, "Ah!" Screaming the whole show. And just tears streaming down their face, and it hurts so much. I was standing at the soundboard, and it hurt. It was so loud. And these kids are just crying, watching him. And it was,
maybe that's how he got away with it, because, you know, people couldn't actually hear what he was doing because it was so loud. He just blurted it out.
Yeah, he had a lot of 15s. It was pretty good.
The height of his career.
Go ninja, go ninja, go.
Yeah, well, he's trying to do what he can, you know.
Have you seen that mac and cheese commercial he did now?
No. Oh,
he's got a Kraft macaroni, like...
Like, that's how you know you made it, right?
He's such a whore. He's on like he's on, you know, building a house or whatever. Do you guys want anything? You want some water or something? I got water.
I'm good.
Yeah. Sure.
I'll grab you water. I'll come right back.
But yeah, that Kraft mac and cheese commercial cracks me up though. Like,
well, I think you try to turn the Ice Ice Baby into like a rock song too. Metal.
There was like It's the same words. It's just he growls it pretty much the whole song. Like,
yeah. You know, well, that and the guitars are in B. Yeah. So it's like, gawk, gawk,
gawk, gawk. Do anything to milk that a little more. And,
yeah. Now, is there anything, I was curious, like with doing like cover bands, is there anything you guys have to like legally watch out for when you're doing? No, they're
not
cool.
Unless we sell anything. Right, like if we were to like Celebration Day live at the pageant, we sell it for $20 or whatever.
Yeah. Then you'd have to get into...
Yeah, or if we were to do video for El Monstero and sell that, or anything where the songs are being sold for money, but as a performance royalty, And there's, you know, there's probably 150 bands that are doing exactly what we're doing on some level, you know, throughout the planet.
And you're not claiming that this is your song.
Right, no, you're legitimately saying that it's advertised as giving them... Yeah.
Waters Gilmore Griffin. Yeah. No, that's not on the... I wrote not this on song. Any of this stuff. Just this is a song I wrote with the... God, the French Riviera in 1974. No, that's not
play,
that.
I'm playing in D instead of standard, so it's different. So it's not... I mean, come on, man.
But you do still play... original stuff with like the you still doing Incurables?
Yes, yeah. The Incurables is my band. That's what I get to do when I'm not playing other people's music, and you know, it's just good, you know, American rock and roll kind of stuff. Yeah,
yeah. I got to see. It's been a bit, but I was saw you guys at Blueberry Hill. I don't know, maybe 2 years ago now or something like that. With John Henry and the Engine.
Yeah.
And you guys had Funky Butt Brass come in and play horns, and that was a good night.
Yes,
that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was very fun, and that's you know, stuff like the cover bands and the things that I do like that are allow me to do, you know, I can get the guys that I want to play with, and it allows me to a little more freedom on stuff like that, and you know the again, we're blessed with the fan base that we have on a lot of these things, because a lot of those people that started out coming to see El Monstero or whatever, it's like, hey, that guy's kind of cool. And I go, hey, I've got this other band. You should come out and see it. And a lot of them come out.
Nice.
And it's, you know, it's a really good, you know, transition between, you know, I like that guy when he's playing these songs, but I also like him when he's writing his own song, you know, which is, you know, a lot of people can't make that jump of like, well, just play the Pink Floyd.
Yeah. When are you going to play that Pink Floyd stuff? Yeah. That was at the other show, buddy, but
right.
Appreciate it.
So how often... You just try to squeeze those in between other stuff? Or?
Yeah, that's been a little bit more difficult lately. half of the Incurables also play in a band called The Feed, which is a great band as well. And one of the guys in The Feed was having a baby this year, so they were like trying to cram a whole bunch of things in before the baby happened. So I'd be like, hey, man, I got this thing. And then, like, oh, we're already doing something. Yeah. So. But yeah, that's starting to come around a little more, with some more Incurable stuff. And I've also thought about just doing a whole nother thing. I think the older I get, the more I long for my youth, as anyone who gets older does. but where I just want to like bring in all my amps and play loud as hell and yeah. jump around and go crazy. So I've been kind of concocting something with some friends of mine where nice. That might happen as well. And, you know, but they're all, you know, all this stuff, dude. If you would have told me when I was 12 and I started doing this that I was going to get to do the things that I get to do and get paid for them
right.
and then have all these other things on the side that might not be as lucrative financially, but were more rewarding musically. And, you know, I'm just shocked that at my age, I still get to just play the guitar
yeah.
and have a great time.
Yeah. I was listening to Stern Show this week, and he had Slash on with Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators
mm-hmm.
as they had their brand new record come out Tuesday, and just listening to Slash talk about how he's still excited to play music at his age yeah. and like, you know, he plays these songs, he's got, you know, all the whole new album, and he like when he's not playing, he's still in his bedroom
yeah.
playing guitar, and he's, you know, it, and you know, he's still excited about it. You know?
Yeah.
And that's fun to see that, like, in yourself, that even as you get older, the love's still there, and the music's, you know, still coming. And
That's the beauty of it, man.
Yeah.
It's like, it, you know, and we're sitting here in Killer Vintage surrounded by guitars.
I say, that can't be a bad time to come in and just be like,
yeah.
just a sweet environment.
That's you know, my entire, like, I knew what I wanted to do when I was a 13-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And my dad, and I love my dad to death, but my dad was 30, and he didn't know what he wanted. And he's right. still, you know, he's much older than that now.
Yeah.
You know,
he's still 30 years old. He's
my dad
doesn't know what he wants to do, but he is still 30.
Right. But, I mean, you know, he always admired the fact that, like, I knew when I was a kid, this is what I'm going to be and what I'm going to do. And I've been fortunate to be able to do those things.
So who else, you know, you said, you know, Keith Richards and David Gilmour and these guys that, you know, you get to be for the night. But who was the first one?
Ace Frehley. Yeah. Kiss, a buddy of mine moved in down the street. I'm still friends with, but he moved in. He was from Amity, New York. And he had Kiss Alive 1, and it was the most amazing thing I'd ever heard in my life. Now, looking back and realizing through the passage of time that it was not a live record at all, they never dubbed all of it.
Yeah.
But my concept of music, nobody in my family played music other than my grandmother played organ. My grandmother, my grandfather, and my mom's side played. But my grandmother read, so she would turn a page and play and turn a page and play. And so my concept of music with all these little notes and staffs and to play a song, you had to turn like 6 or 7 pages to like do this thing.
Yeah.
And when I saw Kiss Alive, or when I heard the record, and I looked through the whole book, and there's, you know, 15 pages of pictures of this band playing music. And I could not find one music stand anywhere on the stage. And I thought they were like geniuses because they could remember all those little black things. And I didn't realize those little black things were 2 fingers on a guitar.
Yeah.
But the idea that they were doing this without looking at any music was just blew my mind, you know? And so Kiss Alive 1 was the whole, like, and I was in Catholic school, and everybody in Catholic school hated Kiss. Kings in Satan Service, Night in Satan Service, whatever it was.
Right.
But, like, the fact that it was anti-establishment, everyone hated it, and I was, me and 3 of my friends were the only ones that got it, was like, this is cool, and I know I have to be like those guys.
Have you ever seen the movie Detroit Rock City?
Yes.
Yes, that's what you think of it. The mom's like going to break his drumstick. Mom, give me my fucking drumsticks.
Exactly. And that was, it was huge, man. I grew up in suburban Ohio. I grew up in Cincinnati. And like all that, all the things that were cool about that to me as a 13-year-old kid or as a 12-year-old kid, you know, it was like, It was that record, and it was all those 70s live records. It was Aerosmith Live Bootleg was another huge one. You know, Double Live Gonzo was the Ted Nugent one. There was Frampton Comes Alive. It was, you know, Wings Over America. Like, all these huge live records where it was like, these people are playing a concert, and you could hear the M80s going off in the background, and like, you knew everybody was high, and you know, all that, like, all that stuff just totally connected with this little, like, white suburban kid that wanted to be a guitar guy. It was great. Great time to want to play the guitar.
Right.
I saw Kiss, Poison, and Rat at Verizon, or I think I believe it was still Riverport then.
Right.
I guess Verizon now, isn't it?
Yeah. Right. And it was I was, I don't know, 17, 18, somewhere in there, and I but it was still one of the coolest rock and roll shows I've ever been. Like, I mean, it to me, it was, you know, the epitome of rock and roll when they come out and they got the you know, just way cranked up, and they got explosions, and they got, you know, the makeup, and then at the end of the night they just shatter their guitars on the stage, and that's like,
I mean, well, see, now here's the difference. Okay, like when you saw them, they had already been, you know, homogenized, and like it was a national treasure, you know. Everybody loves rock and roll all night. That's, you know, like when I was a kid, that was, I try to explain to kids now, because I work with kids in like rock and roll camps and stuff like that, and I try to explain them that, like, if you can imagine Kiss was Marilyn Manson.
Right, yeah.
And they're like, what? And I'm like, seriously? Yeah. I used to have this kid that was a guitar student. He would always bring in, like, all this death metal stuff.
Yeah.
And I would, like, teach him death metal songs. And one week he shows up with, like, I don't know, Poison record or something. I'm like, why are you bringing this in? And he goes, well, I got in trouble at school, and my mom took away my death metal records, and this is all I have left. And I was like, okay. I go, dude, I understand. When I was a kid, I would get in trouble at school, and my mom would take away my Kiss records. And he was like, what, people were afraid of Kiss? And I was like, they were the most terrifying thing in the world at one point, you know? And that's some of the things that I think is missing in rock music today is, like you watch, have you ever seen Gimme Shelter, the Rolling Stones movie, where they're playing in Altamont? You've never seen that? Okay. There was an element to rock music in the 70s where, like, some guy might just break a pool cue over your face no reason, and nobody would sue anybody. That was just, man, I went to the Stone show and some guy broke my nose.
Right.
You know, there was no security. There was no, you know, you could push your way backstage. You could, you know, all these things that were completely, you know, or like when, like, I see rock concerts now and no one's smoking cigarettes, you know, and it's this clean, you know, geriatric form of rock music, you know, whereas like some of the stuff in the 70s when I came up was the last bastion of rock, and like the when rock and roll was really scary, you know, and when things could go wrong and people could fall to their deaths, you know, like stuff like that. Like one of the first concerts I ever remember, and I wasn't there, was 1981. I grew up in Cincinnati. Was a Who concert where 12 kids died trying to get into the show.
Crazy.
Because it was a festival gig, and when they opened the doors, everybody just ran for the front of the stage. Well, some guy on the inside of the arena happened to open one door, and 13,000 people were trying to get in one door, and wound up trampling 12 kids. And that was some of my first, like, wow, this is rock and roll. It's like, you could die.
We have that
just
now,
want to see it.
We have that now, but it's Black Friday shopping, so.
Right, exactly. It's that same thing.
Where people are getting
rock and roll. You know?
I'm going to be in a Black Friday shopper instead of a rock band. Well, I think, like, the whole, I guess, idea of rock music is so commercialized, and there's so much, like, good business. And maybe that's, I mean, I don't know if it was what it was like then, but, like, it just seems like now it's majorly a business, and there's not so much as much freedom for bands to go and kind of do what they want. And I think there's no shock factor. People have seen I mean, the internet gives people the ability to see anything they want. There's no shock factor or anything that kind of builds that were, you know, like you said, kind of you're growing up and that stuff was unheard of. And,
right.
You know,
where you couldn't see, you know, you're like, I wonder what they're doing. You have no idea unless you paid the, at that point, $7 to go see the Who. You know, you didn't know what was, you know, what was happening.
Yeah.
There was no YouTube.
No, I'll say YouTube. You can't go and see a live, you know.
Yeah, you guys came right out of like the clean cut Beatles, you know, with their.
I'm not that old. Well, I'm just saying.
Yeah, but that's what, you know, there was.
You know, the sock hop in high school, you know.
You know, you guys were all counting candy and Cadillacs.
There was that era of music, Temptation. And then you got into the rock and roll, like, so, like, where, you know, Jim Morrison doing what he was doing was completely different than, you know, what Paul McCartney and stuff. So, like, you had never seen anybody do, you know, with their shirt off and doing all this crazy stuff. Wow. You know, it's like, that's why people took attention to that, where like this crazy, you know, rock and roll show, like compared to what this clean cut image of what the Beatles were in the early, you know, and stuff like that.
Oh, totally.
And so I'm just, that's what I'm not.
I think the only album that my parents ever were like, oh, and this was because my sister was Green Day's Dookie. And like, that was the last
Your
time I ever
Your parents owned Dookie?
No, my sister. My sister got it. I remember my parents being like, this is horrible. This is, you know. But now when I was growing up, they didn't care what I listened to. But like my sister, I remember she got the Green Day, and I think my mom broke it or something like that. But that was was the last. Like that's the last thing. That's like I said, Marilyn Manson was like the last kind of big. Seems like there's scary stuff going on there, you know. But outside of that, there's nothing really now that you know. Bands that are like you listen to them or something, you know. It's just it's not there anymore.
Right.
I got introduced to when I was a kid, all that stuff. Like, so I grew up. We didn't have like family function without Allman Brothers, ZZ Top, or Lynyrd Skynyrd. Like Southern rock runs through my blood, I love. I remember some of my first CDs I got for Christmas. I got like I think it was the Greatest Hits of them, but the Aerosmith first Greatest Hits they put out. Pearl Jam, Vitalogy. Anyway, so those are some of the, like, but, like, I've always been into, like, that rock, and my parents being products of the 70s, too. All like, they...
Am I as old as your folks?
No, my parents are almost 60 now.
Oh, okay.
So they're, but they went...
They, maybe my dad. That's about how my old
But my dad graduated in 74, so he was, you know, so he was in high school right when all that was going on. Gotcha,
yeah.
You know, so they...
And I'll meet people, especially like Monstero, the Celebration Day shows. They're like, man, I saw Zeppelin in 75 at the Checker Dome.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll be the first ones to let you know, it was $8, you know, and it was great. They were awesome. And I was so high, and, you know, whatever. But it's that kind of thing where, like back then, rock music was dangerous, and that was, again, for me as a kid, that was the beauty of it. Was like this was an outlaw thing. This was something my parents didn't get. My parents were really nice people. I was born on an Air Force base, you know. I was born 10 minutes from Haight-Ashbury in 1968. My parents never went there, you know. So they were those kind of people in 1968, and like I came up, you know, Catholic and super suburban and white at that point. but like still all white, those stuff, all yeah,
still white.
And I'm still white. But at that point, you know, just that whole the outlaw, you know, the rock and rollness of what rock and roll was, you know.
So, just out of curiosity, because we kind of wrap up here, is there any bands now? You know, you got the couple that you cover. Any other cover bands that you like? I would really just love to play some more of the band. You know, not to say
I'm
that you're
doing
like,
all,
sort of, but
I'm doing all three of them. Yeah. There's Led Zeppelin, the Rolling Stones, and Pink Floyd. And I play in a band called Petty Cash Junction, where we just play Tom Petty and Johnny Cash, and I sing all the Tom Petty songs.
Not gonna do like Weezer or anything. No, I'm just joking.
But those, you know, that's all the stuff I, you know, and I again I work I do a thing called Camp Jam, which is all like kids, and they play rock and roll and half of them play Black Sabbath,
yeah.
Kiss, Jimi Hendrix. You know, they're still, they're learning the same things that I learned when I was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, on that music is always going to be cool.
Right.
And that's the best part about it.
Yeah.
It's crazy to for me, like, to think that, like Tom Petty, you said, just put out a brand new record this year. And he's been still, like, you know, it might not be the same, but you think of, like, what he's, his career span, like, you know, from the 70s to, you know, 2014 now. And, like, even, like, you know, it's kind of weird to think that he started that young. And, like, because, like, a lot of people probably remember, like, he had a big thing in the 90s, too, with, like, the Wildflowers album.
Yeah.
And, like, so he was really relevant then, too.
Well,
and, like,
again, I'm going to predate you, but... Like when New Wave was happening and everybody had skinny ties, Tom Petty was kind of like, I remember Refugee when it came out.
Yeah.
And it was this kind of like somewhere between punk and New Wave, but it was still rock and roll. And all the stations that were playing Lynyrd Skynyrd and things like that could play a Tom Petty record. Mm. And he like conveniently fit right in this thing. And he's always like, even when I was a kid, like, I was in, at that point, I was into like Judas Priest and Iron Maiden and stuff. But I liked Tom Petty because it was, you could hear the rock and roll in it.
Yeah.
You know? And that's, and he's a guy that's chameleonically, is that a word?
I'll allow it.
Yeah. Just, you know, has kind of drifted. Like, if you, there's his 80s records, there's the 90s records, there's like all these things where he's, you know, picked up different things and made them, you know, fit into whatever he was doing at that point and make musical sense as well as fit into his chronology of where he was going, you know, as an artist. And
I just, I mean, I can't imagine any bands current right now being relevant in 40 years. It's those are rare to see these guys that are, how long that music's held up and where it's still, I mean, and it's not that he's still doing the same thing. He's making new music, but it's like,
you want to know why? I'll tell you why.
Give us the
Do
secret.
We have enough time?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, as much time as you want. I don't want to keep here all night, but yeah.
Here's why no one will ever be as cool as the old guys were.
Yeah.
Is because there was no tune in to Jimmy Page on, you know, Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
There was no, you know, follow me on this. Like, you had to either know somebody that knew something or you had to go see it yourself.
Yeah.
And there was, there's no, like, YouTube.
No mystery.
No YouTube of Bonzo and Jimmy fight over a jelly donut in the back of the van. Like, that.
Yeah.
You didn't see any of that. There was none of it. You had to, your only experience was that gatefold album that you could look at and study, and whatever words they happened to put on the sleeve of the album and the grooves, and that was it. And you had to go see them, or you had to, you know, that was your and it was an investment on the part of the fan, as opposed to now, the investment is so small. You just be like, oh, I wonder what that guy from One Direction likes for lunch. Yeah. And you go,
bologna sandwiches.
Guy from One Direction likes for lunch. And there's eight videos that you can watch that guy eat lunch.
All right.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. And I'm not blaming, they're just another thing.
Sure.
But there'll be somebody else after them that is exactly the same thing. But that there was a mystique. There was a, you know, there was a beauty in the mystery of what those bands were about that will never happen again. Because, like, I've told friends, I was like, the next greatest band in the world, the next, like, because there really hasn't been anybody since Nirvana that where it was like, boop, it's over.
Changing,
this is the next thing. There hasn't been anyone since then. If you think about them, that was really before, I mean, the 91, not a lot of people were even internet-y at that point. You know, that was kind of like the last. Seinfeld, for me, is like that. It's like, if you watch Seinfeld now, 95% of the premises are negated by the fact that they didn't have cell phones.
Yeah.
you know. So that, like, that's that kind of line in the sand. I really believe that the next band like that will not have a Facebook page. They will not have a website. They will not be on Twitter. It will be something that it's that you either attach yourself to or you will not be a part of.
Yeah.
And that's what's gonna, in this day and age, will make someone go beyond what everybody else is.
Yeah, kind of rebuild the mystery of not just letting you know what you're doing all the time. And that'll be interesting because, like, with labels and stuff, I mean, that's almost part of being in it. It's like, okay, well, you got to have this. You got to be able to have a Facebook page and a Twitter and this because you got to reach out and tell people this, this, this. Yeah. And for somebody to come out and be able to accomplish that, that's probably why they would reach that plateau is because of that. And that'll be interesting to see.
Because it won't be something that every dipshit that goes and buys jeans at the mall will be able to, you know, find out about your band.
Right.
You know, it'd be like, it will be something cool. It will be something that not everyone will get. And that's what will make it cool.
Yeah. Well, man, great talk, man. Yeah. I enjoyed kind of picking your brain a little bit. Because you've got, I mean, you've been around, if you will, and you know, I mean, you can tell you know your stuff. You read up on the it was just a great enjoy talking to you and
cool.
So we got let's see what all we got coming up here.
Celebration Day, Chesterfield Amphitheater on September 27th.
Yes,
and then the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, the Street tribute. Fighting Band.
And that's the November 21st at the Pageant.
Yes.
So get out, go see a show. Take in.
I'm sorry I talk so much.
Oh, man.
No, we shoot for like an hour, give or take, and that's just because there's some time to say, hey, stop.
Yeah.
Right. We're at an hour and 33 seconds, so we're totally good. I have no problem going over an hour. And like I said, if it was like talking about One Direction the whole time, I mean, then we could have gone for 2 hours, but, you know.
Yeah,
no,
of course.
It was just, I just love talking music, and especially when you kind of know what, you know, what's going on, and it's not just Linkin Park's the best band in the world. Whatever. So so appreciate you sitting down with us. And again, first podcast. So again, you can't do any more. I mean, no. And thanks for letting us come hang out in your in the guitar store here. Killer Vintage here. Let me get the address here. 3201 Ivanhoe Avenue. Check it out because it's a cool little place. Like I said, it's nicer than like going into like a guitar center because you kind of have a little more intimate, just like a show. It's just a nice, cool place to come out and place you don't find on every block or anything. So come check it out. And thanks for coming on the show.
Not a problem.
Appreciate
thanks, Brad.
Thanks, Jimmy. Cool.
Good times.
Yeah.
All right. Appreciate the show. All right. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, rockpaperpodcast.com, all that good stuff.
See,
all
now, if you guys were really cool, you wouldn't have that.
Now, we're going to erase all of our Twitter or Facebook and everything until somebody says, hey, did you guys hear about that Rock Paper Podcast? And like, yeah, they don't even put their podcast on the internet.
Yeah.
You have to go, like, bootleg it or something. It'll be awesome. All right.
I got a cassette of it.
Yeah, that's right. Rock Paper Podcast cassette, dude. No, you got to flip it over for the other half. That's pretty good. All right. Well, thanks for going on the show, dude. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thanks for everybody for listening. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.